Well, I've got some questions.
Okay.
Last CD, Enemy and Bonomy, was 7 years ago.
Yeah.
After that CD, you retreated, I heard, to Wales. Did you have had enough of music business, or did you not have any inspiration to make a new CD?
No, I think it's a recurring pattern now where I sort of make a record and then hate the music industry so much that I'd never want to do it again for a while, and that's kind of, I think, happened after nearly every record I ever made. So, but after, well, Enemy and Bonomy was a bit different because I enjoyed making that record. But when it came out, I can remember Jeff Travis from Rough Trade getting in touch with me and saying, "I think you've made a great record, but I don't think anyone's going to get to hear it, and I don't think your management is rubbish, and I think you're in a mess. I mean, you know, I kind of think you." He said, "You need my help, I think, or would you like it?" So, and he basically said, "Well, you should forget about this record straight away, Enemy and Bonomy, and you should." So I didn't. What I mainly did then was to just make hip hop beats for a couple of years after Enemy and Bonomy, some of which, and then I occasionally go to New York and get people to rhyme on them, collaborate. Some of that's just coming out now. I'm working with a rapper called Skills. His name previously known as Mad Skills. He had an album on Raucous and an album before that. He's really cool. But this stuff didn't, you know, I was just building this stuff up. And Jeff just said, I don't know why he didn't say it before, really, but after a few years of just doing hip-hop, which nobody heard, he said, why don't you make a record of like you singing something? So that's what I did. So, yeah, it's just kind of... It is a horror, you know. I have a love-hate relationship with the whole business of making pop music, but I can't believe I'm still doing it, really. It's like mad. You know, I mean, who on earth in their right mind? I was always astonished because you'd go away, maybe I'd go back to Wales. So I'd make a record and then I'd go and promote it, then I would hate it and I would split up with my partner, whoever my girlfriend was, I would split up with my management, I would split up the band, and I'd go and live completely alone in a cottage somewhere. And then get bored with that, and a few years later, go back up to London and walk into a record company or walk back into Virgin or Warner Brothers and say, "Okay, I'm ready to make another record." And they always said yes. It's amazing why they should. I'm surprised they didn't say, "Well, no, you know, you're clearly a fuck up. You know, you're clearly going to sabotage any idea of a career you always have. Why should we give you any more money?" But they did. And it's kind of amazing, really, to be, you know, to get to, given that I've always screwed my career up, to get to 50, to be 50 and still making music is strange. I'm very, very lucky.
Yeah. Last year you were involved with the compilation of the early recordings.
I wasn't very involved. I had to listen to it once.
Oh, okay.
Which was pretty hard listening for me. No, because all the master tapes have disappeared and it was just cut from old records. Some, I don't know whose records they were. I don't own any of those records. I'd never listened to them since I made them. So that was strange to listen to that.
Because in the new record there's a lot of guitar, and in the 80s, 90s, there was the synth pop and then the rap. And the guitar that disappeared.
Absolutely.
Almost completely.
Yeah, I kind of fell out of love with the guitar. I mean, there were still guitars, but there were guitars used in the way that R&B uses guitar, almost as a like a much more rhythmic thing, almost a percussive thing, you know, much less. The guitar didn't do the harmonic function support. That was all keyboards, all synths, and that was the plan, really. I hated the guitar for a while. But thank you. Brilliant. But yeah, this record I think has quite a lot in common with, in some ways, the early Rough Trade stuff. It's a very do-it-yourself kind of record, since I did do it completely myself. And, it, you know, it was made in a little studio at home, as opposed to a huge budget in a studio in New York or something. And so it feels like a Rough Trade record to me, in a way.
Did that have any influence on the recording process? And the Cubism Psych was a record I heard that took a lot of time to record. And this new recording was a new CD. Was it
quicker?
Quicker?
Yeah, although you don't measure time in the same way. Those, like, the three albums I did in America were very, very expensive. Huge, ridiculously stupid amounts of money. And great amounts of time in big Manhattan studios with giant SSL desks, you know, and an enormous attention to detail. You'd spend a week on a snare drum sound, and then you'd spend another week deciding if you needed to delay it by 10 milliseconds to get the feel right, that kind of thing. Whereas on this record, it was just get out of bed, play with the guitar for a bit, go in the music room, bang something down. I mean, I'm not a great musician, so it's far more rudimentary in that way. So a completely different approach. And I guess if you added up the amount of time spent doing it, not really not long at all.
When listening to the record, the record sounds very basic.
Yeah.
Except for your voice that you're doubling a lot. You're singing.
I think that was the big thing that we got to was because I never particularly liked my voice, you know. I would always try and get it down in the mix and say, just make it like one of the instruments. Whereas this is the first, you know, it's a record where it's really all about the voice. It's just like stuff around it is much simpler, and it's it's just about. And I guess it's because I got a bit more. I enjoyed singing more. I never used to like singing, but now I like it, I think. I'm still this dumb. So, yeah, it's just... It's a lot of... Yeah, it's... Man sings in his back room. That's all it is, really.
You didn't have... when you were ready with the songs, you didn't have the urge to invite others to... do something
about
it?
Well, there was a point at which this album, I thought, was maybe just demos. And that I would, at some point, finish them properly. Because they don't, you know, they don't... For a while, when I got moved away from the indie thing into trying to do the pop thing, I was very concerned about structure, song structure, about, you know, verses, choruses, bridges, which was all new to me, because coming from punk, I neither knew nor cared about that. But this time I didn't, you know, I kind of thought, well, yeah, when I started doing it, maybe after I've got these ideas down, maybe even I'll go back to LA or somewhere and find some people to make it sound like a proper record and make them sound like proper songs. And then as it went along, that just didn't seem like, I didn't feel like something I wanted to do. And that had a lot to do with moving back to London, to Hackney, and... making, you know, like living in a neighborhood I liked, getting friends that I liked, and feeling more comfortable and confident, and not trying to impress anybody, really. I think those records, the 80s records, were, I was always trying to impress somebody, principally other musicians. I thought, you know, whereas this isn't trying to impress anyone, I don't think.
So you enjoyed making this record for yourself?
Yes.
Instead of the other side, where you had to prove yourself.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I think that's well put, yes. They were all about trying to prove myself to somebody.
When you started making this record, did you have any idea where it would go to?
No.
Which direction?
Not really. It's very... I didn't... Whereas in the past, you'd always kind of second guess... I used to write songs with certain individuals in mind and think this song has to impress that guy, which is stupid, I know, but that's the way. That was not in the early punk days, but in the middle period or whatever it was. Whereas, yeah, this, like I said, this, it kind of, if it, I don't know, it does, like, song structures are not really particularly, I don't know, it's very simple, very unresolved in a way, very, but yeah, it is what it is.
We're recording the CD. When did you get the idea to start to do gigs again?
Somewhere like towards the maybe nearly when it was finished. I think Jeff at Rough Trade said, "So do you ever want to play live again?" And I said, "I don't know." But by that point, I had made some friends in my local pub I kind of had an idea that maybe they could be a band. I mean, they're all very, very pretty young drummers. It's my drummer's 21st birthday today. And, you know, he's not really a drummer. He's mainly a plumber, you know. But he does some bit of drumming. And Alyssa, the bass player, works behind the bar in the pub. And she didn't even own a bass, so I bought her a bass, and she's learning to play it. And so it's a lot like the early Scritti, when you didn't really have great musicianship or anything else, but they were just good, interesting people that you like to be with. And I thought, well, we could try some gigs, and if they don't work, you know, so what? What's the worst that could happen? And I'd be amongst people that were similarly inexperienced to me. I didn't want to, you know, ring up bunch of people I know from America and fly them over to make it sound like the record or better or something. So we did one gig in Brixton in the beginning of this year, and it was kind of rubbish, but it was fun. And we've done 6 now, I think. We did one here. That's rubbish as well, you know. Musically really quite inept, but fun. It's fun. So as long as it's fun, I'm very keen to keep doing it. And the album's going to come out on the Nonesuch label in America. Nonesuch, you know the label?
Yeah.
And they're hooking up a tour for us over there. And I think there's talk of Japan. We're playing some festival already in a few weeks' time. They've asked us to play with Massive Attack in Hyde Park. Some festival. It's fucking crazy because, you know, we're so kind of amateur. But it'll be fun.
Does it surprise you that we've been away a long time and Scritti Pitty has always been, they've scored some hits, but never big success for a long period.
Yeah.
That everybody is still so anxious to hear you and live and so.
It's amazing, yeah. The few gigs that we've done, like in London, people fly in from Japan to see us, people fly in from America, people fly in from, I don't know. Balmy, really strange, but that's good. I don't know why. You know, I wouldn't cross the street to listen to me, to be honest. But there we are. That's my own thing.
So the first gigs you played as Double G in the
Treasure 3, yeah,
plus two, yeah,
of course.
And then suddenly there was a Paradiso gig, and that was on the name Scritti Pitty.
Yeah.
Why
did that happen?
Yeah,
I don't even
really
know, really.
Strange.
Oh, yeah, it was strange. I don't know, but I didn't really care, you know, I suppose. Although we played in London, I think once since or twice since the Paradiso, and we were Double G in the Traitorous 3 again. But I think maybe we'll be Scritti now. It didn't make much difference to me. I mean, in my head, we're Double G in the Traitorous 3. But it's whatever it says on a piece of paper doesn't make much odds.
The gigs, you've always played the new songs. The difference between older work and new works is relatively big.
Yeah.
Enemy and Bonomy is the record that's
closer.
Nearest, yeah?
Yeah.
Any ideas of playing all songs from that record or other older songs?
I think maybe it would be fun to. I don't know if it'd be fun because I hate listening to my old. I'd rather really not. But maybe, you know, there'd be some purpose to seeing what playing a few old songs would be like, maybe even from the very beginning. Some songs from 1978, some from 1980, some from 1982. Yeah, maybe do a few old songs. See what happens.
It's not something you you don't want to do it as a start.
No, I'd rather be. I mean, I'd rather write new songs to play than do old ones. But we'll see. I don't know yet.
Are there any concert plans for the Europe in the near future?
Well, we're talking about it. I didn't realise, because I don't know much about playing live, that in fact doing tours is quite expensive. I mean, you probably know that I was talking to Colin from Rough Trade, saying that very often bands lose money making tours. So we've got an agent. We've got a guy that looked after the Libertines and things. I think he's putting some tour stuff together for us. There's talk of us maybe playing a tour with the Guillemots. Do you know the Guillemots?
Yeah, I've heard of them.
And I think that's quite likely to happen. I think fairly likely to happen fairly soon. It's my feeling. But that's certainly what I'd like to do.
The CD, if you listen to it, the overall feeling is that it's laid back, melancholic,
mm-hmm.
And when you're playing live, the songs are more, how do you say it, vivid, more upbeat, more up-tempo.
Yeah.
Did you have the, now you're playing them live, do you have not the idea from, I should have...
Make them sound like the record?
Yeah. Or did you have the idea from, if I now play them now live, it's more fun to play them in another way?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, simply that. But plus, we haven't really got the... I'm not sure we could make it sound like... No, we could probably make it sound like the record. I'm not really bothered to make it sound like the record. I'd rather... everybody on stage enjoyed playing it rather than everybody be concerned to make it sound like something else. So, but I think we will get better.
I was impressed. I was with the parodies.
Oh, great. Well, it'll be... Next time we're here, there'll be a massive development. We'll be so much better. Not in a bad way.
You've been away for a couple of times. There are still fans that are really, from the 80s on, still are still fans right now.
Yeah.
They're coming to your gigs, want to talk to you after. How do you feel about that? That some people are still interested after all that time?
I think they invariably seem to be very, very nice people, and it's been really nice to see them. The only people that I think there are some people who definitely are of the opinion that, like, Cupid and Psyche and the rest of it, I mean, that was some sort of pinnacle, and that I'll never make anything better than that, and that was that's pretty boring. But for the most part, people have been really sweet and supportive. I don't mind. Everyone's kind of respectful, and I'm just, I guess, just grateful that they're there. You know, it's nice to see them. There's some great fans here in Amsterdam, actually. Some really good people.
New CD. It's more, I said it's more melancholic. Are there any influence of no rap, no hip hop? Are there any bands that you're listening to now, right now, that have really influenced the CD?
There's lots of lyrical references to hip hop in it, although they're pretty obscure. They're quotes from other hip hop lyrics, and in songs like the Boom Boom Bap, I sing all the titles of first Run DMC album, and not many people have picked up on that, but I guess it's a lot more the influences of music I liked before punk when I was growing up, kid, you know, white bread pop music, which would have, you know, started with the Beatles and the Beach Boys and then have gone through its, I liked a lot of sort of folky stuff, bands like Fairport Convention. I got into English traditional music a bit when I was at school, you know, I used to, first things I learned to play were kind of, you know, really was all that sort of jigs and reels, you know, all that kind of, I used to, unbelievable, but I used to love all that stuff, and when I was about 15. So though, maybe some of those influences in there, you know.
On contemporary music.
Contemporary music? Oh, I didn't really, making this album, no, I'd stopped listening to hip-hop pretty much, and I'd just, I think maybe it was a function of iTunes or something, where you sort of look at the store and you think, oh my god, that record, I haven't heard that since, you know, because I don't have any records from my past. One thing I used to do whenever I split the band up or leave my girlfriend or whatever, sometimes I would leave the flat that I lived in and leave all my belongings there. So I left behind two great record collections, one that I'd started since I was a boy, and now it would be, oh man, I wish I had it. And so I don't have any of the records that I grew up with, none of them. And with like iTunes, you'd sort of just wander around or whatever and see, oh Christ, there's a Richard Thompson album or there's a something. And so I was listening a lot to old stuff I listened to when I was a kid, really. And then last year, the album that just blew me completely out of the water was Sufjan Stevens' Illinois, which has just raised the fucking bar. You know, it's like, holy shit. Let us try, you know, really should work harder. Because the other thing, this record, I guess in a way, compared with that, is a really lazy record. You know, that's just got so much work in it. Work, you know. That's got a kind of fucking work ethic. He works hard. Now, have you heard Avalanche? Which is the album of outtakes from Illinois?
No, Illinois I've heard.
Avalanche comes out in a few months. I've got it, and it's like, oh, Christ. So much work.
If you hear the CD, it's so so built up, so big.
Yeah.
You wonder how much work it is to make it. And then knowing that he's made another,
yeah,
so much songs to record it, it's really...
Yeah, I think I'm just a lazy guy, and he's kind of... There we go.
The song has got 14 tracks, the CD, has 14 tracks. Did you had you recorded more tracks?
Yeah, yeah, there was about 30, and I didn't really... I largely... I just sat down with Jeff Travis when it was all finished and said, what do you think of this one? He said, yes, I love this one. And all the ones that didn't get on the album were the ones that had guitar solos, because he didn't like my guitar solos. It's a great shame, but so it's all kind of fairly low tempo. This album's kind of quiet and, like you say, melancholic. That's because every time I got sort of rocking, and it's difficult to rock, multi-track yourself rocking. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you need a band, really, to, I think, to rock. And I kept doing guitar solos. And you could see Jeff would come around to the house and he'd be really enjoying a song, you know. And he's going, this is great, this is great. And then it would go into the guitar solo and you could see his head stop moving. And you'd lost the battle with that one. So... I think there's one tiny bit of guitar solo on one track on the album, and that was as much as I could get away with.
The title you see is White Bread, Black Bear. Where does that come from?
It's my diet, largely. I'm addicted to both things, processed bread. Also, white bread has the sense, you know, when I was in America often, I'd go into the studio with ideas, and initially people say, man, that is so white bread, you know, meaning I guess it comes from that very white culture, that very like processed pop kind of stuff, but very but also at one end of my street there's a Turkish bakery that makes this really delicious chewy soft white bread, and at the other end of the street is the pub with the Guinness, and I would basically, many days I'd wake up and say, okay, today I'm not going to eat any of that processed bread because it makes me feel like shit, and I'm not going to go to the pub tonight and get drunk because I'm just going to stay in and work on something. And invariably, about 11 o'clock in the morning, I would just have to go to the bakery to get some white bread because I craved it. And invariably, 7 o'clock in the evening would come round and I'd walk to the pub and drink beer. And that's basically the whole... Plus, they're kind of supposed to be bad for you. So... So, that's the thing. Yeah, a lot of the album, in a way, is about addictions, I think. It's got a lot of... quite an addictive personality.
Okay, one last question. Now you have the WGNet Trader 3 website, which is all mailing list. Do you have any ideas of building a really critically site with old stuff on it?
I don't know about that. I wouldn't want to. It's so stupid because the WG site is basically finished. It looks really cool as well, but. I work again, it's like everything done like DIY. I've worked on all that, and the sleeve of the CD when it comes out is my girlfriend did it with me and the lady that lives next door in Hackney. So, and she did the website, and I kind of pulled the plug on it because there were some pictures of me that I looked so fucking stupid. So I said she should take them away, but yeah, it's all imminent, but I don't ever want to have to look at it. I hate all that.
You like the recording and the gigs, but all the stuff around it is still...
Yeah, pretty...
exhausting.
Well, it's just... I don't know, it's kind of fucked up, you know. Talking about yourself is really bad. And, hiya, Jehovah's Witness. And reading about yourself is really... dreadful. I stopped doing that a very long time ago. So you can be as rude about me as you like, and I will never know.
I won't. If you would record another CD, would you do it the same way, or would you involve the band with it, or a band?
I could imagine still working with... some of the people I've worked with in the past, David Gampson maybe back in America, maybe do a disco album with him. I talked about that. Now, I could imagine making all sorts of different records in all sorts of different ways, so we shall see. I don't know yet.
Okay.
Thank you very much, man. Thanks for coming. Cheers.
Thank you.
That's a good one. I got one for myself.
This?
Water.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It tastes like
water.
It tastes like water.
It's really like, wow. Oh, what a great...